Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 1:19 p.m. That is Pacific Standard Time. Today is February 14th, so happy Valentine's Day. Well, Coca-Cola today was the leading decliner, and it was down about 7% on the Dow. And when we look at this decline, it's pretty spectacular, particularly over the course of the last year. When we look at it over a longer term horizon, then we can see that every time that Coca-Cola has got to a new high over the course of the last 6 years, it's failed to sustain the upward break. And every time it's pulled back, it's found support at a progressively higher level. So that is potentially now what people are waiting to see happen. One thing that I'm reminded of is that with these big dividend aristocrat type companies, that generally speaking, it is when they see their yields get up to about 3.5% that dividend hungry investors start to come back in. When we look at, for example, Nestle, just simply on the dividend side of the equation, it got up to 3.5% at the period between 2009 and 2011, and because the share has been performing rather well, the dividend is contracting, but 3.5% was an important level of support. Well, it's a similar story, for example, when we look at Pepsi. Pepsi also has been seeing its yield ranging below that 3.5% level. Johnson & Johnson, despite it being in a completely different sector, has often also been finding support around 3.5%. So it's going to likely see, or we're going to likely see an example of this exact same thing happening with Coca-Cola over the course of the next few weeks, considering the depth of the pullback. Because even though the earnings were positive for last year, but their expectations for this year are lower, it's very unlikely that Coca-Cola is going to be cutting the dividend. Well, when you do, though, see these sorts of very significant pullbacks on individual shares and that being tied to earnings, then that is likely to have an effect on the Federal Reserve and their attitude to what they should be doing with the size of the balance sheet. So the yield today was down in a reasonably dynamic manner. And inside this range, over the course of the last month, the dynamics have been downwards. So that does suggest that there is potential for additional tightening in the yield. If we just flip it around and look at the price, there are definitely people out there who are willing to bet that the most likely move by the Federal Reserve is going to be to cut interest rates. So that is something that we're starting to see being priced into the bond market. When we look at the stock market, however, well, it's hard to say that we've had anything other than a continued advance off the post-Christmas lows. We are certainly approaching an area of potential resistance. We have had a distinct absence of dynamic moves, and the S&P 500 today was down, but really 7 points down on a 2,700 point index is nothing at all. This is not the kind of move that is really going to scare anybody, but we are at a really rather important Rubicon here because of the proximity of the highs from October through December. It's a very similar story with the NASDAQ 100, and that is also very close, though, to at least testing the peak that we saw at the beginning of December. And the most bullish thing that we could see happen is a mild consolidation in the region of, or more particularly above, the trend mean. When we think about mild consolidations, so far that is what Amazon has been able to achieve. It has pushed back above the $1,600 area, and it held onto it today. It's going to have to do better than that, of course, and certainly there is a mild downward bias over the course of the last 2 weeks, but this is very short term in nature. When we start to think about the depth of the decline, the subsequent rebound, the proximity of the sequence of lower rally highs, this is a natural area where we might anticipate consolidation. So far, this has been a very tight consolidation. That's, I think, the more important point. If Amazon can push up and out of this range, then that is going to assuage the fears of many people about a retail slowdown. Of course, Amazon doing well when the rest of the retail sector isn't is probably more a reflection of the seismic shifts that are going on in the retail sector rather than really anything that it tells us about the health of the retail sector. Now, when we take a step back and start to look at the rest of the world, we had a significant move today in Indian banks. Yes Bank has been the bank that pulled back most aggressively. The RBI has become much more activist with enforcing governance norms in the private banking sector. The fact that Yes Bank was in positive territory in here today did sap some of the interest from the state-owned banking sector. So State Bank of India was down in a reasonably dynamic manner this week. Well, the one, I think, more important point about India is that it represents the most exciting bullish case for banks in the world today, where you have 1.3 billion people, half of whom are under the age of 25, where you've had the rollout of 4G and the government's project to supply every family with a bank account. That's all incredibly growth-oriented. Now, the next question is the outlook for non-performing loans and the potential for a bank recapitalization. These are out there on the horizon. The oversight that was imposed upon both the Yes Bank and then Dewan Housing Finance, that is representative of the RBI trying to get its house in order. And Dewan was also in positive territory in here today, falling from 700 to 100 in the space of about 6 months. That is pricing in an awful lot of bad news, and in the event that it does not in fact go bust, then obviously the price is a lot lower today than it was previously. Well, then when we look at Axis Bank, which has been clearly leading on the upside, well, it was also in negative territory in here today, but it has got plenty of room in which to consolidate, and it does look like the short-term overbought condition is going to be unwound. Of course, the big uncertainty that many people will be very conscious of with regard to India is the upcoming election and whether the BJP can hold on to its majority, or perhaps more, I think, more correctly, how much of its position in Parliament it can hold on to, because I rather think that it's unlikely that the BJP is going to hold an absolute majority. Well, then, with the potential for a little question to be asked about the Indian administration over the course of the next while, what we can definitely see with Mexico is that question has been answered, and AMLO is being weighed by the market right now, but the stock market has broken downwards and it has encountered resistance in the region of the trend mean. The Mexican peso has been really quite firm over the course of the last while, but the dollar does appear to be at least bouncing from the most recent of the progression of higher reaction lows. What I find particularly interesting is that we're starting to get a considerable growth in the number of currency market indices that are out there. I've often expressed my dissatisfaction with the dollar index for the simple reason that it gives an inordinate overweight to the euro. So, for example, when you look at the euro, or sorry, look at the dollar index, the euro is 57% of it, and the Japanese yen is 13%, and the pound is 12. So you start adding all of that together, and you're looking at over 80% of the index. Well, Bloomberg has come up with its own index, and it has got some surprising parts to it. If we look at the weightings, and then it brings the euro down to 31% and the yen to 18%, but then Canada is 11% and Mexico is 10%. So that's giving a substantial re-rating to two other currencies. And then you also have the renminbi, the Korean won, and the rupee. So I think arguably this is a better measure of what we might anticipate from the dollar. What is particularly interesting is that it's got a very similar chart pattern. And I think perhaps that is more reflective of the synchronicity that we're seeing in the performance of currencies right now, rather than the fact that you're looking at something entirely different. If we do see, for example, China doing worse, commodities doing better or worse, then that is going to be affected, or that is going to be reflected, I should say, in this Bloomberg Dollar Index. Then I think this is also another point is when we look at emerging markets, then the MSCI index is also heavily weighted by China. So when we look at the emerging markets currency index, well, it looks pretty similar to how the renminbi has been trading. So that's, I think, also what we're seeing is some index biasing in terms of this in this particular index. But when we look at JP Morgan's currency emerging market currency index, excuse me, then what we are presented with is, I think, a much more appropriate way of looking at these are looking at currencies generally. It gives us a much better depiction of just how strong the US dollar has been. And this is much less weighted by the renminbi. In fact, it's almost an equal weighting between the renminbi and the rupee, the Mexican peso. The Singapore dollar is in there as well, although I would hesitate to call the Singapore dollar an emerging market currency. Well, when we look at this particular index, we can see that emerging markets currencies are now encountering resistance in the region of the trend mean, following a pretty impressive period of outperformance over the last few months. But this has been a very clear downtrend over the space of the last 7 to 8 years. It's going to have to, at a minimum, sustain a move above the trend mean in order to really demonstrate that we are back in a demand-dominated environment. And I think this is part of the reason that we're starting to see people talking about US exceptionalism. It's because the dollar remains firm and Wall Street continues to outperform, particularly versus Europe. Europe continues to have a substantial number of problems. And I would certainly take the argument very clearly that you don't buy economies, you buy stocks. But the reality is that a significant number of European stocks are either heavily dependent on their domestic economies, or they are heavily dependent on the global economy. And the global economy is slowing down. So that is one of the significant headwinds that we have. Now, the Euro Stoxx index is right in the region of the trend mean. And just like any other index, it needs to push back above it in order to demonstrate we're back in a demand-dominated environment. The sequence of lower rally highs is still intact. And so far, this has been a mild consolidation in the region of the December high. But it's going to have to do better than that. That is certainly something that we need to start to see happen. If Europe is going to return to a credible growth story, then the index is going to have to at least sustain a move above the trend mean. The banking sector is also barely steady in the region of the lower side of a decade-long range, and it was in negative territory in here today as well. Having been quite weak yesterday, the euro was in positive territory today, so we're getting a little pause in the region of the November low around the 112 area, but that does nothing to really question the fact that Europe needs a weaker currency more than just about anywhere else. Now, when we look at what's going on in China, since the New Year holiday ended, the market has done nothing but rise, and today it was pretty much unchanged. But the most important thing it's done has broken its sequence of lower rally highs. And the A-share index is now approximating the region of the trend mean. This looks much more like a support building phase than we're seeing in some of the other markets. And I think the rationale behind that is quite simple. The peak for Chinese markets was in 2015, and we've seen a substantial re-rating of the market since then. I don't think we've really had much re-rating of Europe at all. I saw a rather interesting chart in here today as well with regard to buybacks and their impact on the market. So when we look at the USA, I think everyone is familiar with just how much there has been in terms of buybacks, but that hasn't really happened in Europe at all. Buybacks haven't really been a factor in the European markets, and that is also a contributing fact in why the stock market has been so weak. Well, when we look at China, the reason that the market has been weak is because the administration has been siphoning credit out of the system for the better part of 18 months. And they have pretty much reversed the flows that are moving in and are, well, now out of the shadow banking sector. So we certainly have the potential that the USA and China are going to come to some form of agreement. That agreement is probably going to be pretty limited in scope. I think the most likely scenario is that they will get enough work done that they can stretch the timeline on new sanctions. Well, sorry, let's call them what they are, tariffs. But it's going to be very difficult for China first to admit that it has been engaged in industrial espionage on an industrial scale, and then to stop it. So I think that is one of the clearly limiting factors in terms of the progress that can be made in terms of these talks. Well, eventually, we are going to see the resolution of those talks. If additional tariffs are introduced, then the renminbi is going to fall further, and it has certainly steadied from the region of the trend mean, or the dollar has strengthened from the region of the trend mean. If we're thinking about a broad environment where the dollar has been really quite firm, and that remains the case, then if we were to then think about what is China going to do in the event that additional tariffs are introduced, well, they devalue the currency the first time, and there's a very strong likelihood they would absorb the additional tariffs by further devaluing the currency on this occasion. I think that is the clearest risk with supporting the stock market in China today, despite the fact that it is does look to be increasingly constructive. And the H-share index is now, I think, establishing itself above the trend mean. So I think that's one of the more encouraging signals we've seen for this index in more than a year. And as long as it is sustaining the move above 11,000, I think we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. Now let's take a look at Japan. And the index, or the Nikkei, has been positive for 2 days. It's unwinding its oversold condition relative to the trend mean. We have long regarded this, the second section index as being a lead indicator for the wider market, and it unwound most of its oversold condition relative to the trend mean last week, and it was in negative territory in here today. It is going to have to at least sustain a move back above 7,000 in order to clearly demonstrate that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. The yen was a little stronger in here today, and this is also another chart where we've seen a reversion to the mean. So, having seen the reversions to the mean, and some doing a little bit better and some doing a little bit worse, we're still at this phase in the market where we need to see a clear change that either these rallies are going to persist further so that a consolidation can happen above the trend mean, or they're going to fail. And that question hasn't really been answered just yet. Meanwhile, gold prices were firmer again in here today and continuing to hold this $1,300 area. This little consolidation is relatively similar size to the one that we saw in January. And when we look at the price over the longer term, well, this looks like a range, and most particularly since we've seen support below the $1,200 area being confirmed. So eventually, when this range is concluded, then I think that we are quite likely to have an explosive breakout. Ranges are explosions waiting to happen. The market has been ranging below $1,400 for 5 years, and when it eventually breaks above $1,400, then that is likely to reignite interest in the sector. One of the potential reasons for why we might see that is because of the global phenomenon of currency debasement that is likely to be exacerbated by the rise of populism and the application of deficit spending, or more friendly way of talking about it is that it is fiscal stimulus. But essentially, it is spending money you don't have. And the way that governments have historically done that is to go out and print it. So that is potentially really quite bullish for gold. But one of the things that we've noticed over the years is that gold tends to do best when it's appreciating in lots of different currencies. And it is firming. It's at new highs or close to new highs in Australian dollars. It is towards the upper side of its range against the Brazilian real. Against the Canadian dollar, it's also right in the region of the upper side of its range. In Swiss francs, it's the same thing. In renminbi, it is also coming back towards the upper side of its range. Even when we start looking at maybe some of the bigger ones against the euro, it's broken its sequence of lower rally highs. Against the pound, it is improving from the psychological $1,000, excuse me, £1,000 level. And in rupees, it's breaking out. Well, what this is starting to tell us is that gold is in fact a monetary metal, and it, just like any other currency, it tends to do best when it is appreciating against everything else. Well, against that background, when we look at the performance of gold shares, they have really been underperforming. And certainly the Gold Bugs Index was in positive territory in here today, and it is consolidating above the region of the trend mean. But gold shares are comparatively cheap. Particularly compared to where the gold price is. And the fact that you're getting M&A activity starting to pick up now, that is representative of the fact that new high-grade gold resources are, or long-life high-grade gold resources are like unicorns. And you just don't see them very often. And what that suggests is that if a company wants one, well, then they're going to have to go out and buy it because their chances of finding one are comparatively small. So we have the potential here that we could have a supply inelasticity meets rising demand market. And that is, I think, that is really potentially one of the more exciting things we're seeing in markets right now, and not least because It's a cheap asset. And after 10 years on the upside, there really aren't that many cheap assets out there. One thing that we are certainly seeing, though, is that oil prices are firming, and Brent crude was up an additional dollar in here today, so it is now completing this range. And we're probably being set up for the next leg on the upside for the oil price and an unwinding of that very steep decline we saw between October and November. But then, when we look at the soft commodities sector, coffee prices today were softer by an additional cent, so now sustaining the move below 100 cents and coming back to test that 95 area. That's Arabica, so maybe we should also look at Robusta. Of course, Arabica is much more about Brazil and Robusta about Vietnam, and the price here is also in the region of its December lows. The fact that the Brazilian real has been a bit weaker has been an inhibiting factor for both coffee and sugar, but coffee, or excuse me, sugar at least, was in positive territory today, not least, I think, probably because of a contract change. If we look at US sugar, then prices are just about holding in the region of the trend mean. Then cocoa is all about Côte d'Ivoire, and it has at least been able to hold its sequence of higher reaction lows. But one thing that we can say about all of these soft commodities is that it would be really hard to make the argument that they are trending higher. They are barely steady, and orange juice in particular is trending downwards. The one where we have the clearest evidence of a recovery has been in lumber prices. But lumber is trading almost in lockstep with some of the home builders in the USA. So I think that's certainly something that is, I think we have to become aware of that when you've got that very strong commonality and the fact that we have the certainly got the potential for home builders to do better as long as the economy is expanding, but with the bond market contracting, then that is starting to suggest that the bond investor generally is pricing in the potential for a recession. So that does suggest that if we are in fact going to come through this without a recession, we could be in for quite a bit of ranging. And I think that is perhaps the most likely scenario when we look at the S&P 500, for example, considering that we've had the we had some acceleration, we had the pullback, we had the failed upside break, now we've had the failed downside break, and now we've had the overbought resurgence, then eventually we're going to get some consolidation. And that consolidation could last a while. I continue to be reminded, however, of the presidential cycle. And in the first 2 years of the presidential cycle, we generally see the Federal Reserve raising interest rates and tightening up conditions, and we definitely saw that. In the first half of the third year, we generally do tend to get a wobble. And well, so far in the third year, we've had a really resounding rally. But it is usually in the second half of the third year that the Federal Reserve starts to ease in terms of just taking or putting their foot back on the gas in terms of stimulating the economy. And that is generally aimed at giving some assistance to the incumbent in the upcoming election. Well, that's potentially what we could see. Well, generally, then you tend to get a very impressive rebound in the second half of the third year, and it can persist all the way through to the election. So if the presidential election cycle does in fact hold true, then we might just get some consolidation and then a further advance in the latter half of this year. I think that it has got to be a potential scenario. Obviously, now we are still at this, I think, rather critical juncture for markets, where a substantial number are right in the region of their sequence of lower rally highs and our trend means. So that is a logical area where we can anticipate some pause of consolidation, and I think we are starting to get some evidence of that starting to occur. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.